Dr. Valerie here.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mackey.
We're back at it. We're going to talk. I know we had talked about the DEXA scan and how to read that, but I wanted to also get into things that you could do like diet, supplements, lifestyle, even talk about HRT that would be beneficial for women's bone health.
This is something that obviously comes up a lot. Certainly, if you listen to the last one about DEXA scan, I mean, every woman is concerned about their bones, and rightly so. Most of our patients do not do osteoporosis medication, right? They choose to do it through, diet, lifestyle, exercise, HRT. That's our preference as well, and our sort of our biased in some ways. So I thought we'd just kind of dive into that. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's see. We talked about the DEXA scan, and then we also on the previous one, and we differentiated between osteopenia and osteoporosis. So osteoporosis, of course, is more density, bone density loss. So you want to be a little bit more proactive with that as opposed to osteopenia. But osteopenia land is so vast. Like osteopenia is a DEXA scan T score of negative 1.0 up to negative 2.4. So a negative 2.4 is going to be a whole lot different than how I'd want to treat somebody that was a negative 1.0. But I do feel like foundationally, we get a lot of women that from all over the world that are concerned about their bone health and talking about hormones. And hormones are super important for bones because we're going to go into that. But like we were saying before on the previous video that we did, is it's just one aspect, right? It's one piece of the, maybe a nice big piece of the puzzle, but it's one piece of the puzzle that probably one of the biggest things is I kind of differentiate it, and I know you do too. We're working on taking the inflammation out of the lifestyle, incorporating diets, diet that would be good for building muscle, good for building bone, and then also doing supplementation.
Now I did read something the other day when we were preparing for this. It said something about when a woman goes into menopause that she can lose like 20% of her bones in the next 5 to 7 years after menopause. So, a woman in her 50s that is transitioning to menopause, the drop in estrogen is sort of a big deal. Just for bone density in general, right? Sorry, I lost my train of
Yeah,
thought there.
no, I totally know what you mean. We were talking about before. So in our bones, we have like the hard bone, that's they call that the corticobone. And then inside the bone is the trabecular bone, which is like that soft, spongy bone. It's metabolically active. It has what's called the osteoblasts and the osteoclasts. And this is why hormones are so beautiful, is the estrogen and the progesterone inhibit osteoclasts, which osteoclasts want to break down the bone. But it also promotes osteoblasts. So that's where before menopause, you're less likely to lose bone density until you hit menopause. But that was one thing that we've always talked about is I think it's super important not just to deal with it in our 50s, is anybody that you know or that you love that are in their 20s and 30s, that's when you really want to work on that bone density. That way, what is it? It's hard to build it once you lose it or
If you don't move it, you lose it.
yeah.
And we sort of talked about that on the last one that we did when we were talking about the DEXA scan too, that women in their 20s and 30s are not really, they're not really concerned, they're not really worried about their bones at that point. Granted, even younger people in general, we have this invincibility about ourselves when we're in our 20s and 30s. And then we get to like 35, 40, and then our attitudes start changing a little bit because our bodies obviously are a little different than they used to be. But bone density, I mean, you're right. I mean, one, it should be looked at early, as I said on the last one as well, just to identify if there is any accelerated bone loss. Looking at it for the first time, what right now is the recommendation for a woman to have her first DEXA scan? Do you know?
Usually it's 51,
51.
right?
So really menopause.
Right in menopause. So I do think it's good to do it earlier, but I mean, it's good to just have a DEXA scan anyway, just to see where that bone density is. But I do think the lifestyle is huge. And you're right, when you're in your 30s, there's a lot of other things you're worried about than your bones, right? You're worried about your bank account, you're worried about your career, you're worried about kids. I mean, a
Absolutely.
lot of things to be worried about. But it is one thing that I think looking at that lifestyle, because I love the hormones. The hormones are important, but I do feel that lifestyle, especially exercise and the weight build, we always talk about, weight bearing exercise for females. and building muscle, that's probably one of the best things you can do for your bones.
Sure. Now we alluded to that. This is where the conversation between activity and food intake or nutrition, that's where it really makes a big difference, right? Because if you're doing too much of the exercise and not enough of the nutrition, and that's skewed a little bit, one, it sets women up for overtraining syndrome, which is not great for your muscles, which is not great for your bones. But then it can actually kind of, turn into a whole slew of other things. We've seen a lot of, let's say, triathletes or CrossFitters or, even people that are working in the fitness industry, they push their bodies so much on the physical side, the rest and recovery component to that, sort of gets a little bit missed. And when it comes to exercise, the frequency, they talk about two things. They talk about intensity and frequency, or the volume. The volume of exercise you're doing over a period of time, as your intensity goes up, your volume should go down, right? If you're doing CrossFit and it's a crazy hard workout every single time, you can't do it 7 days a week, right? You should be doing that a little bit less than that, still having a major impact on your bones because you're using you're using body weight, you're actually moving weight. So there's a progressive, what they call a progressive overload component to it. Which is, the whole point behind weight training in general. You were t on the last one, you were talking about how the bone, the osteoblast and the osteoclast. So you have activity that breaks the bone down. That's the osteoclast. But then the osteoblasts build the bone back up. That's the same thing that happens to our muscles. When we weight train, we're tearing the muscle fibers, we're breaking the muscle down. And then the rest and recovery side is actually building the bone back up or the muscle back up. So the same sort of remodeling thing is happening both on the muscles and the bone. If you don't move and you're just sedentary, or like you said, you gave that example of an astronaut in space where they're weightless and there's no gravity whatsoever, that degradation gets accelerated very quickly.
Yeah, so with the osteoblasts and the osteoclasts, people will say, and I've thought of it too, well, then I don't want any osteoclasts. I don't want to break down anything. Don't break down the bone. Get rid of the osteoclasts. But in some ways, it's a way of cleaning, such a beautiful system because, bone needs to turn over. Cell, it's alive. It needs to turn over. So if I'm doing some kind of walking or some exercising, that the osteoclasts want to break down that bone so that the osteoblasts can build new healthy bone. So you don't have this old bone around. So it's this nice, really nice process, but it can get skewed once you hit menopause or if you're under eating because the body's just trying to survive, that it'll just eat its own muscle tissue, it'll eat its own bone. So I do feel like the osteoblasts and the osteoclasts have this beautiful sort of magic dance. And the best way, honestly, I think, like you were talking about CrossFit, I'm not going to do CrossFit. I've done CrossFit before. I'm never going to, that's just not my thing. I'm just not going to do it. I like yoga, but really my favorite exercise, I like to do weights with you, but I really love walking. I feel like walking, putting your body weight on the ground, that gravity you talked about, that is really good for building bone. Now, that's not to say flexibility isn't important. A lot of people like their rebounders. That's good for lymphatics. That's good for the lymphatics. Going on your spin bike is fun. going swimming is really fun, but that doesn't really have a lot of gravity. So if you're thinking about bones, do those other things, absolutely, but do something that puts your body weight on, or whether it's weights or walking, hiking, maybe running, but not for me.
Running, I think, people that love to run just love to run, but I think you got to be a little careful with your knees and your ankles and, your hips and different things. And, from a endurance perspective, when you are doing that kind of activity, your cortisol is going up. When you're doing a lot of, again, a lot of volume when it comes to running, your body's pushing out a lot of cortisol. You're also going to be breaking down those muscle, the muscle tissue. And if you're breaking down muscle tissue, you're more than likely sort of having an impact on bone as well.
Wait, back up real quick. So, two things you just said there. So, something about breaking down muscle tissue, is that from the cortisol going up?
Well, sort of. Bodybuilders have, not that we're all, any of us are trying to be bodybuilders, but bodybuilders have sort of mastered the science of building muscle and burning fat, right? So there's a lot that we can learn on how bodybuilders do things that we can sort of translate into our everyday lives. Okay. Of course, they're very keen on protein, right? You need to have a certain amount in order to stimulate protein synthesis. Protein synthesis is how you actually build muscle, right? And any bodybuilder will tell you it's not easy to build muscle, right? You can't just pick up a 2 pound weight and expect to build any muscle. It, you know, takes that process of tearing it down and then it grows back bigger, and it tears it down and it grows back bigger. But you have to do that under the right caloric environment. You can't do that if you're at a deficit. Okay, so big bodybuilders, they're using steroids sometimes to increase their volume, right? They can work out every day, but it's the food that they eat that makes them grow big, right? So they have to have thousands and thousands of calories to be able to grow those big muscles. If they didn't eat as much as they did and they just worked out, their muscles wouldn't get that big. So it's the food that drives the growth. Sort of the same thing for average people. Now, granted, I'm not telling everybody they need to go out and eat a bunch of food, but you know, when it comes to, down to some of those basic parameters, that's why for most women, now granted, you're 120-ish pounds, you probably don't need 100 grams of protein a day, right?
I can't even get there.
Yeah, that's a lot for you, right? Just because based on your size. But an average rule of thumb, especially if a woman is trying to lose some weight, the average rule is roughly about 100 grams of protein per day. That would be 25 grams, 4 meals a day. Right. You know, that's the 3 meals. Okay. 3 meals, then that amount would be more like 30, 35 grams per meal in order to get to that 100. Okay. You'd probably be fine just in general, like 0.7 grams of protein per pound of body weight. So you'd be at somewhere between, let's say, a good number would be 70 to 75.
And that's doable. I feel like that's reasonable to be able to. I
Well,
think.
vegetables, right? Vegetables, maybe some potatoes here and there. Occasionally, you know, we might do some rice. You know, we don't do a lot of rice.
I like rice.
Yeah, of course. Here,
I'm Asian. I like rice.
your mom, you like, you tell her to not eat rice, she would never not eat rice.
Every day.
She loves her rice. But, you know, she's from Okinawa and, you know, that's just what they do. It's just part of the culture. I have another patient. She's staring diabetes in the face, like literally. She's in her early 50s too. And she's also Japanese, and she's just having a really hard time giving up the rice. But it's a cultural thing. I totally get it. So it's not that carbs are bad, especially when you are an athlete or you're training, especially what we're talking about from a bone density perspective. You know, actually lifting some weights, carbs can actually be your friend. They're like your, you know, the way I describe it is, you know, like going keto and low carb when your body's burning fat. As a fuel source, or ketones as a fuel source, that's like economy diesel fuel. You can just kind of go forever, right? When your body is using carbohydrates as a fuel source, you know, which is what we all do by default, when you're doing that under a athletic performance kind of situation, that's almost like jet fuel, right? You know, you get the athletic performance from the carbohydrates that you don't get from a lower carb diet. Okay, so someone that's weight training on a regular basis, you can use carbohydrates as part of your recovery process. So you work out and then you have your carbs after you eat as a way to, you know, to bolster not only your calories, but, you know, there's some certain hormones that change. And not only that, but you're shuttling some of that, what they call glycogen. So you're storing some of that carbohydrates back into your muscles, which then can make you stronger and help that muscle repair better. So yeah, carbs ain't really the, you know, the enemy necessarily. It's just the type of them. So the, you know, liquid calories, right? Number one. Okay. So anything that you drink that has liquid calories in it, I would even include even things like fruit juice, fruit smoothies, even protein shakes. I would even include those things that we assume to be healthy, but sometimes kind of might be on the fringe depending on what are the ingredients of some of those things.
So, what do you think about calcium for bones?
Well, I mean, of course, that's the mineral part of our bones, right? So calcium,
Phosphorus, yeah.
magnesium, phosphorus, and calcium are the main ones. So of course, calcium has to be part of it. But there's some new research that has come out over the last few years that taking too much oral calcium supplementation can actually exacerbate atherosclerosis. So the new recommendation now is to, you know, it used to be 1,200 milligrams through supplementation all the time. I don't think that's really least through the functional medicine space, I think people are sort of not recommending that as much anymore. But if you get it through, good healthy food sources, and there's plenty of websites where you can find sources of calcium, of course, dairy. There's almonds, there's plenty of other vegetables that have reasonable calcium in there. I know you love sardines, right?
Oh, yeah,
You're
sardines.
eating the bones of the fish, things like that. Now, granted, there's also a trade-off
That's a whole
with
other
eating,
topic.
heavy metals in fish. You can't eat too much frequency there either. But what's your thought about calcium in general?
I think if anybody has ever tried to take 1200 milligrams of supplemental calcium, they know that is a lot because calcium is such a big molecule. These tablets are ginormous and trying to get them in and calcium can also be really constipating if you take too much calcium but not enough magnesium. So I do feel like calcium still old school is important, but maybe if you're going to supplement, is supplemented at about 500 milligrams a day. That's doable. And then trying to get about 500 to 700 milligrams, of doing cottage cheese. We've talked about dairy. That's got great protein.
As
That's
long
got
as you
calcium.
tolerate, as long as you don't have any, lactose intolerance or any sensitivities,
Yeah, I think also, nuts and seeds have calcium and magnesium, which I think that's another great source for the bones. But like you said, the sardines, green leafy vegetables, as long as you blanch them to get the oxalic acid out, is great to get that calcium in. But I do think calcium is important. But the how do you feel about, because that now we know that there's this calcium, and then you've got vitamin D, and then you add in the K2. How do you feel about that triad in terms of bone density?
Yeah, well, I think that's where the shift has been over the last little bit as well, is that we've at the same time as we've been sort of not recommending so much calcium, now vitamin D has sort of taken that front seat, and that's the one that we focus on. If you don't have adequate vitamin D, your body can't do anything with calcium anyways. So now you and I specifically push more of the vitamin D. Now, of course, you can take vitamin D by itself; it doesn't have to be with K2, but the K2 is also part of that. Calcium metabolism that gives a little extra benefit. So now, granted, you're talking normal bone density, osteopenia, osteoporosis. Now dosing becomes an issue. Someone is osteoporotic, and their bone density is getting worse and worse. You might want to be a little bit more aggressive, especially if their vitamin D is low normal or below 30 or around 30. You want to get that number up there relatively quickly.
Yeah, that's one point, is if you're taking vitamin D, is to test it. 30 is too low, 100 is too high. So right around 50 to 80 is good. But can I circle back a little bit to that K2? So what I understand is, so to try to keep that calcium from going in atherosclerotic to going into the arterial walls, doesn't K2 and vitamin D help redirect that more into the bones?
Yeah, that's the K2 part. The K2 part is supposedly supposed to help, like pull. It's probably more inhibiting than it's pulling out the calcium. So atherosclerosis in our coronary arteries in our heart is literally atherosclerosis being hardening of the arteries. So as our body is developing plaque, we'll talk about heart disease later, but the plaque, we used to think like a pipe. Like a pipe, the plaque would build up on the inside. I'm making a little circle here. This is the lumen of a blood vessel, right? So, if you are, if that, if the pipe was getting corroded on the inside because there's plaque in there, but really the plaque is being pushed inside of the wall and the wall is being pushed out into the space. Eventually, that atherosclerotic plaque develops calcium or scar tissue or calcium. So the K2 is supposedly there to help. I don't know. I have to look check this if it actually inhibits the deposition of the calcium or if it actually pulls some of the calcium out. I think it does both.
I know it does inhibit the deposition. I'm still a little bit wondering if
Yeah,
it
yeah.
actually pulls it out. I need to see some more information on that. I've heard
I
that,
would
but
agree. Yeah.
I know about the deposition. It helps prevent the deposition
Right.
of the calcium, but then also helps sort of redirect it with that vitamin D
Yeah.
to go to the bones.
Usually, when your body is developing scar tissue, it's there. You can't really get rid of scar tissue because your body is trying to, especially in the arteries, your body is literally trying to protect you by hardening that area so it's not susceptible over time. Even though that does make it sort of susceptible over time, because but usually once it's calcified, it's sort of a done deal. So
I
we'll
mean,
talk.
there's chelation. Yeah, we'll talk
Yeah,
all about
we'll talk
that.
about heart disease later. But yeah, the vitamin D is for, proper calcium metabolism, and the K2 is just this added little side benefit that, like you said, it gets the calcium to go in the right place.
And then what do you think about magnesium?
Well, I mean, as we've known for a long time, it's the most deficient mineral in the body. Granted, we could probably make a list of what those deficient minerals are, but certainly, plays a big role in, 200 plus different enzymatic processes in the body. So minerals like that are sometimes called cofactors. Vitamins and minerals can be cofactors for different enzymatic processes. That you need a certain nutrient in order for this enzyme to work, and magnesium works in a lot of those different processes like that. So of course, it's an extremely critical nutrient.
But what about for bones? Because I do feel like magnesium is a little bit of an unsung hero when it comes to bone
Sure.
density. I mean,
Yeah.
focusing on calcium, love the calcium, love the vitamin D3 and the vitamin K2. But I feel like magnesium is also great for the bones, but there's so many different types of magnesium.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We use, I think, with our patients, we probably use what, four different types of
Yep,
magnesium?
I feel like.
Three for sure.
Yeah, citrate is good for the bones,
Yeah.
but it's also good for constipation. So if you're prone to constipation, citrate is good. And then there's glycinate, which is nice. Actually, that kind of helps with hormone upregulation and helps relax the muscles. And
Yeah.
then threonate, which I like to take at night, magnesium L-threonate just can help kind of calm the brain to help with sleep and anxiety. So I like, but there's so many different kinds, but I do feel like just doing maybe like a complete mineral in terms of like magnesium mineral, I think that would
Yeah.
be, that's really good for the bones. And you can get it from food too. I mean, food is medicine.
Yeah. Definitely, magnesium is sort of complicated, right? Sort of. But like I said, you have your form for what you're using it for. Even there's even magnesium taurate, which is like
Okay, for the heart.
for cardiovascular stuff. That one doesn't really get talked about as very often. But the threonate, of course, for sleep and brain. The glycinate, if you're going to take one across the board, more than likely probably be the glycinate as being the most versatile. But yeah, I mean, certainly when we're talking bones, we're talking menopausal women in general with sleep and digestive issues, magnesium gets talked to, comes up all the time. Even social media, you see it, magnesium videos all the time about, or videos all the time about magnesium. So yeah, certainly. So far we've got calcium, vitamin D, K2, magnesium. What else is on your list?
Oh, one of my favorites, because I did write a little bit of a list, is collagen.
Sure.
In fact, like I was talking about that spongy bone, that trabecular bone that's inside the cortical bone, is that all is like basically bone is mainly collagen. I know we talk about the phosphorus and the calcium being part of that bone matrix, but it really is mainly collagen.
Yeah,
There's more collagen, I think, than those other minerals.
so if you're really think about it, then your bones are mineralized protein, right? So if your muscles got calcified or mineralized, they would be basically not really exactly, but it's just protein that has minerals in it that give it the the tensile strength that it has.
So collagen. So, and just to kind of circle back to collagen a little bit, is there's different types of collagen. I want to say, I don't think I didn't write it down. Good, but I did for you community members. We have a guide on how to read a DEXA scan and also nutrient support and lifestyle for your bone density, women's bone density. So that'll be in the resource section. But I feel like, I think it's
I'll attach it to this lab event.
one and three, collagen one and three, I think are what's really, really great for bone. And then you have some crossover with the hair and the skin, but I do. And also collagen has some protein in it. So I know you say don't always have your liquid protein, but I like to put have collagen.
Sure.
There's a little bit of protein to add to that, but I feel like collagen is probably maybe another unsung hero when it comes to bone density.
Yeah, when I was talking about like protein shakes or smoothies and stuff, they're very popular. But when you're liquefying, you're sort of sometimes removing fiber or you're concentrating it into, a liquid. But after exercise, a little bit of protein with some, carbohydrate like that can be a really nice post-recovery process, and collagen would be something very easy for that. Just it's already in a liquid form. Your body wants that nutrition at that point post exercise. Throw in a little bit of fruit in there, and now you're good to go. And the collagen would be a great protein source as a way to, adding to your 100 grams of protein a day sort of benchmark, getting it in there. So
Yeah, I
that's
think
good.
one of our members had mentioned in the community about the I think it was the beef concentrate protein powder that we had some recommendations because not all of them are great, but I know that that sounds like a good protein powder, and then you
Sure.
add some collagen into it, and like I said, maybe a little fruit or something, and that'd be good post-workout.
Yeah. So, let's say if you're, consuming protein, let's say your goal is 100, like I mentioned earlier. And I think even Dr. Gabrielle Lyons, she recommends most women should be at 100 grams. Now, granted,
Oh, yeah.
she's an athlete. She likes to work out, but she's pushing protein all the time. But there's a big reason for that because of the effect that it has on muscle. In this context, that effect on muscle is going to have an equal effect on or a complementary effect on bone. So yeah, if you ate 75 milligrams and you supplement with 25, or let's say you ate 60 and you supplement with 40 with a protein shake, that has some actual hydrolyzed beef protein with some collagen in there. So now you're covering a few different bases on the amino acid protein side, and then now you're still getting an adequate amount on a daily basis. I think that could be very convenient, very doable. That way you're not having to eat so much protein on a daily basis.
And then also the other one was boron. I do
Yeah.
think boron is a little bit not really talked about that much.
Yeah, boron is kind of like an old school one that, bodybuilders have been using for a bunch of different things for a long time. There's another one that we didn't mention is also a boron in strontium.
Oh, yeah.
Strontium is another one.
Old
And
school.
old school, Dr. Alan Gaby, we actually learned from him when we were in school. He actually wrote a book about strontium way back in the day. It doesn't really ever get talked about anymore now. Strontium doesn't. I think it's kind of was popular there for a minute, and then it sort of just kind of faded, and now it doesn't really get talked about. But certainly boron, most bone specific formulas you're going to find supplement wise, they're all going to have 1, 2 milligrams of boron
Yeah,
in
you don't
there.
need a lot.
Yeah,
Yeah,
no.
you don't need a lot, but a little goes a long way.
Yeah, sure.
And I think we probably should touch a little bit on HRT because we get a lot of women that are concerned about their bone health. HRT, like I said, is like one piece of the puzzle. It's not the whole puzzle, but it
Sure.
can definitely be helpful, especially for menopausal women.
Yeah, like we talked about on the last one, lifestyle, of course, is probably number one. Or it is number one. You can't supplement a bad diet to fix your bones if your lifestyle is not in a good spot, right? The supplementation, even the hormones are not going to overcome some of those major pitfalls. That if your diet and lifestyle are not at least in a reasonable place, those other things are, they just might not be as helpful or as beneficial. You can't over supplement a bad diet. You can't use supplementation to replace what you don't do dietarily. But now if you do those sort of both well, right now there can be a lot of synergy on the supplementation side. And I think honestly in the 21st century, supplementation is sort of necessary because our food supply doesn't have the nutrition that it used to have. So having some of that nutrition to make sure that our nutrient needs are being met on a daily basis, I think is really important. The HRT part, I mean, we've had plenty of women over the years that have wanted to do HRT specifically for their bones.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you're doing HRT, you want to figure out, well, what are your hormonal goals? But you think about with women, for all of us, it's bone density. We all know somebody that has osteoporosis or maybe has had a fracture or or at risk for it, or it runs in your family. So I do feel like the HRT is one component that could be helpful. And like I'd mentioned, the estrogen and the progesterone are good at sort of in with that magic dance between the osteoblast and the osteoclast. Estrogen, when there are studies that when the estrogen and progesterone go down, the osteoclasts go up and the osteoblasts go down. So then you end up losing just a little more bone rather than making it over time. So that's where the HRT can come in. But you had mentioned something interesting earlier about the testosterone, and I don't think people realize that testosterone also is really amazing for bone.
Yeah, there's even some prescription, kind of steroid, testosterone derivatives that you can use that are actually used for osteoporosis. Things that bodybuilders would probably use that, no one's ever heard of before. Like most testosterone, like if you're doing an injectable for men, is, either enantian, testosterone enantianate. I'd say that one a couple times, or testosterone cypionate. Cypionate's the most common. Most women are not going to inject it, although we've had some people over the years that,
They love
they
it.
like to do it. But you have to use such a tiny amount for a woman. Where men, you're going to use quite a bit more. Most of the time for a woman, it's going to be a cream of some sort. And then you just have to worry about, some of the cosmetic things medically with testosterone.
Well, a lot of times we'll test the testosterone through blood work, so we'll check on that. But if somebody were really sensitive or were too high, pimples, hair loss, more in like the top or like the temples of the head, you'll see that. Or just feeling testy. A lot of women can just, it's too much testosterone. They can feel testy. I don't, wouldn't say I haven't. I've had some women where they were taking too much testosterone. They think a little is good. They're going to take more, and then their libido doesn't really do anything because they're thinking of their libido. Because really, libido, I think, comes down to such a multifactorial process when it comes to us females. It's just not all about the testosterone. One component, but not the whole thing. But really, probably the hair loss, the testiness,
The
and
hair growth,
oh
chin,
yeah, maybe a little, yeah, the little
chin,
fuzz.
upper lip, maybe, sometimes if there's too much, maybe around the areola, abdomen below the belly button,
Yeah, a little that a little
you might
bit.
get that more like in a PCOS kind of situation than actually using testosterone, but certainly the breakouts and if you start growing coarse dark hair on your chin.
Well, we all have a little hair. We're all hairy, except for you.
But if you didn't have that and all of a sudden now you're starting to consistently grow, four, five, six hairs a month on your chin that you have to pluck off that are kind of coarse and dark. That's going to be sort of androgen driven for the most part,
And
but.
I've had some women where their testosterone levels were pretty good, doing some testosterone, and but they were growing some hair. And I'd say, well, we could back it off, or they could pluck it, or they could do a little laser therapy. So everybody can. Some people are just really sensitive to it. I even have some; they'll try just a little testosterone, all of a sudden, just break out, even though their levels aren't that high. So that's a way to kind of work on. That's a whole nother one, DHT, and looking at the free testosterone. So that's a whole nother kind of. Resource to talk about, but I do feel like testosterone in terms of bone density is not just because of the muscle mass building, but I do feel like it's good for that bone density because it doesn't have the osteoclast inhibition, I believe, but I do know that testosterone helps promote osteoblasts.
Yeah, so testosterone in general is a repair and recovery hormone, right? So just in general, it's going to make things, if something is broken, it's going to sort of help repair it. Just like with your muscles, that's why bodybuilders, as I said earlier, are able to go to the gym so frequently and do so much work is because the steroids sort of allow that recovery on the back end so they can get back and do it again and again and again and again. And they eat a crazy amount of food and they just, start to blow up like freaks of nature in some respects because some of them get so big. But nonetheless, we can take some of that, discipline and, maybe borderline, what they call like bigorexia. So it's almost like an eating disorder because men just want to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's sort of like the opposite of sometimes what happens to, to women that have eating disorders of some sort. But there's still some science. There are some things that we can sort of, kind of mirror in a more normal sense that can actually pay dividends down the road when we're talking about maintaining or building muscle, maintaining or building bone density. There's some clinical pearls are that we can sort of translate.
Yeah, so when it comes to HRT for women, maybe looking at the testosterone is not the be all end all. Like I said, some women can't even tolerate any testosterone, and that's okay. But looking at that estrogen, that progesterone, the testosterone, and I know we've always talked about, the difference between static dosing versus rhythmic dosing. In terms of static dosing, I do notice your hands are a little tied because you have to be careful about how hard you're going to push that estrogen. And where in that rhythmic dosing, you can get a little bit higher levels, which might be more beneficial for the bone density. But in somebody else that already has amazing bone density, maybe the rhythmic dosing doesn't fit for them. They just do the static because we're not looking at bones. So when it comes to HRT, it really needs to be tailored to that individual and what goals we're looking at attaining.
Yeah, if someone was really worried about their bones, because they're at a disadvantage, rhythmic dosing would be sort of the rhythmic dosing with a little bit of testosterone on the top, where if they're doing static dosing, maybe you emphasize a little bit more on the testosterone. Because like you said, there's only so much estrogen you can give a woman when they're on static dosing. So maybe the testosterone becomes sort of an equal player there. Excuse me. On the rhythmic dosing, you're really developing some really nice blood levels that you're going to be able to maintain over time. So you'd expect that degradation of the bone to be sort of reduced because you're propping up those numbers on a month by month basis, literally. And really, menopause, as I said earlier, I said it a little too early. That menopause, you lose 20% of your bone in the first 5 to 7 years after menopause. Okay, that's a huge drop, like right away, right? So if a woman is transitioning into menopause and she goes on rhythmic dosing right away, you're potentially stopping that abrupt loss of bone. You can't do that with static dosing. You can't do that with the patch.
I mean, it can be helpful. I mean, we've had plenty of patients on static dosing that their bone density improves, over time, which that's not common to do that. So, it just, like I said, it depends on the person. And like you said, you can't just take HRT and not have a, maybe have kind of a crummy lifestyle or, and then expect your bones to be great. It has to be multifactorial.
That's why, honestly, getting older is a lot of work. Like, there's a lot to do.
Get a
Like,
job.
it sort of is. Like, there's a lot to sort of pay attention to. But at the same time, I mean, it's worth it to sort of everyone. And what do they say? You don't have if you're, you don't have anything unless you have your health, right? Because once you don't have your health, then nothing else really matters, right? So, and we're trying to, help people. Health span and lifespan. I know those are, sort of things that are being talked a lot about. Health span is how well we live. Lifespan is how long we live, right? So
We want it both.
we're trying to do both. We're trying to increase our health span for as long as possible, and we're trying to extend our lifespan with a good health span at the same time, right? Where when we were kids, I mean, we know a lot of elderly people, they were just sort of sick for years, for decades. Right. They're just dealing with some kind of, even now, people are still dealing with chronic conditions for decades. I think once you have your health, you want to maintain your health for as long as possible. It takes a little bit of work to do that. It takes effort. It takes money. It takes some sacrifice. It takes not doing certain things and actually doing certain things to be able to achieve that. But at the end of the day, I think, if you knock on wood, don't have any major problems, I think it's a worthwhile endeavor necessarily, nonetheless.
So I know that I had some notes here, and there's so much more we could get into about bone health and supplements that are out there. There's so many different other supplements to take. So this is just, one part of talking about bone health. We'll definitely swing back around and talk about women's bone density and DEXA scans more and what you can do to help with your bone.
Yeah, maybe what we could do is we could actually break down, like, look at the supplement facts of a couple of bone-specific formulas and sort of break them down to sort of see which ones that we actually like. Say, this one's good for this. This one's good for this. This has got a good amount of these nutrients. There's a lot of bone supplements on the market, and I think some of them overpromise and underdeliver. I think other ones are actually, designed or
Truly.
formulated very well. So.
Yeah. So if anybody has any questions, please write them to us anytime.
Yeah. Anything else you have in your notes?
Nope. This was great for now.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.